All right, let's jump into a deep dive on personalized learning.
Sounds good.
We're looking at personalizing learning, optimal learning strategies based on BrainCore Infinity Diagnostics Suite and MLAS.
Okay.
This book is, I mean, it's like a cheat sheet to figuring out how you learn best and using that to just dominate any subject.
Yeah, it's a fascinating approach.
So we're going to be unpacking four big assessments from the book.
Okay.
Brain fit, brain speed.
Mm-hmm.
MLAS, that's Motivation Level Assessment Score, and then the super cool brain print.
I'm excited to dive into these.
To help us make sense of all this, we've got a true expert in all things learning here. So let's kick things off with brain fit.
Okay.
This one focuses on memory, attention, problem solving, and processing speed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think we all kind of have a basic idea of what those mean, but can you give us that deeper understanding? How do these actually impact learning?
Great. So we use these terms all the time, but this book really digs deeper. So, for example, processing speed, it's not just about how fast you think.
Right.
It's more about how efficiently your brain takes in new information, makes those connections, and then actually applies it.
So it's not just being like quick on your feet.
Exactly.
It's about how your brain actually processes.
This is the whole process.
Okay, that's really interesting.
Okay.
Now, the book talks about different scores, low, mid, high, for each of these functions.
Right.
And the learning strategies, like, totally change depending on where you fall on that spectrum.
Yes, that's the key.
Let's say someone struggles with focusing for a long time.
Okay.
The book calls that a low attention score.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean they're just doomed? Like, are they always going to be easily distracted?
Not at all. This book actually suggests that instead of just trying to minimize distractions, you know, which we've all heard a million times.
Yeah, like turn off your phone.
Exactly. It says that those with lower attention scores, they can actually train their focus by using techniques like active recall, spaced repetition.
Mm-hmm.
It's about engaging with material on a much deeper level, so it's harder to drift off.
So it's not about, like, willpower. It's about almost tricking your brain into focusing.
Exactly.
I like that. The book also talks about pitfalls for those with higher scores. You'd think, like, oh, they've got it made.
You'd think so, right?
But it seems like there are downsides, too. Like having super high processing speed.
Absolutely. So someone with really high processing speed, they might absorb info super quickly.
Yeah.
But they might also rush through stuff and then they miss the nuances or they get bored easily if it's not challenging enough.
Ah, I see.
So the book really emphasizes finding strategies to stay engaged and really push those boundaries.
So even our strengths can kind of work against us.
They can if we don't know how to manage them.
We don't understand them.
Exactly.
So it really is all about that self-awareness.
Absolutely. Understanding your cognitive profile, that's the first step to really optimizing how you learn.
Okay, so we've got brain fit. That's about understanding our different strengths, weaknesses, cognitive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about brain speed?
Okay.
This feels more about like the pace at which we learn.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Brain speed, it measures how quickly you can adapt to new learning situations.
Okay.
And how efficiently you process new information. Some people naturally just absorb things much quicker, while others benefit from a slower, more, you know, methodical approach.
And the book, again, it breaks it down into those low, mid, high scores.
Yeah.
So for someone with, let's say, a lower brain speed score, what are some things they can adjust in how they study? Because I think a lot of people assume, like, oh, I'm not a fast learner, I'm at a disadvantage.
Right.
Is that true?
The book really pushes back on that assumption. For those with a lower brain speed score, it's really about patience and strategic repetition.
Okay.
So instead of trying to cram a ton of info all at once, the focus is on mastering just a few concepts at a time and revisiting them often.
Gotcha. So quality over quantity.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Like, I'm definitely someone who needs that repetition to, like, really get things to stick, even outside of, like, academic stuff.
Yeah.
What about those with higher brain speed scores? Can they just, like, breeze through everything, or are there still things they need to be careful of?
Well, there's this misconception that if you learn quickly, you've already mastered it.
Right.
But, like we talked about with processing speed, high brain speed learners might struggle with staying engaged if the material isn't challenging enough.
Okay.
They might skip over important details or not develop that deep understanding because they're moving so fast.
It's like that saying, slow and steady wins the race.
Exactly.
Sometimes taking your time leads to better understanding.
Absolutely. And the strategies for those high brain speed learners, they focus on maintaining that engagement and really digging deep into those harder concepts, pushing those cognitive boundaries and not just skimming the surface.
So far, we've talked about brain fit and brain speed.
Yeah.
Both of those are on that like cognitive side of learning.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're getting to an assessment I think a lot of us can relate to, maybe even fear a little bit.
Okay.
MLAS,
mm-hmm.
which is Motivation Level Assessment Score.
Right.
What does MLAS tell us about how we learn?
So this gets into motivation, which is often overlooked, but so crucial.
Yeah.
And it breaks it down into four parts.
Okay.
Intrinsic motivation, extrinsic motivation, goal orientation, and then self-efficacy.
Okay. I'm already intrigued. And honestly, intrinsic motivation, that's always been a struggle for me.
Mm-hmm.
If a subject doesn't like immediately grab me, it's a lot of work to stay engaged.
Yeah, I hear that.
Some people seem like naturally driven to learn anything, but I need that personal connection to the material to really get into it.
And that's a very common experience.
Yeah.
And it shows why understanding your motivational profile can be so powerful. So for those who, like you, have lower intrinsic motivation, the book suggests focusing on making learning more enjoyable.
Huh.
That might mean connecting it to your interests, finding a learning style that works for you, or setting like small achievable goals so it doesn't feel overwhelming.
So not forcing myself to be interested.
Yeah.
More like finding those natural points of connection.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes me feel a lot better.
Oh.
Now, what about extrinsic motivation? Is that all about like rewards?
Yeah, you got it. Extrinsic motivation comes from outside.
Okay.
Like good grades, praise from teachers, parents, even tangible rewards.
Mm-hmm.
And while that can be effective in the short term, the book really emphasizes balance.
Because I can see how relying too much on external rewards, like it could actually hurt someone's intrinsic motivation down the line, right?
Precisely.
Like if the reward's gone, does the desire to learn just disappear?
That's the problem.
Yeah.
So if we think about the big picture, the goal is to cultivate a genuine love of learning that goes beyond those external things.
Okay, so how do we do that?
That's where the other two components come in, goal orientation and self-efficacy.
All right, so tell me more about those. What does goal orientation actually mean when we're talking about learning?
It's about how we set and approach our goals. Mm. The book talks about different goal orientations, like mastery-oriented learners. They're driven by this desire to really understand and improve their skills.
Mm.
But then you have performance-oriented learners. They're more focused on, you know, external validation, getting good grades or being the best. And as you can guess, there are different strategies that work best for each.
So it's not about saying one is better. It's about recognizing how each approach affects our learning.
Exactly. For example, a mastery-oriented learner might push through challenges because they're driven by that internal desire to learn,
mm-hmm.
but they could also be prone to perfectionism.
Oh, that makes sense. And what about self-efficacy?
Okay.
I know it has something to do with believing in yourself, but how does that tie into motivation, especially when we're learning?
Self-efficacy is basically your belief in your own ability to succeed. It's that voice that says, yes, I can do this.
Okay.
And studies show it's a huge predictor of how well you do academically.
And I can see that. If you don't think you can succeed, you're probably not going to try as hard.
Right.
But how can we like boost self-efficacy, especially if someone's struggling with a particular subject?
The book stresses setting realistic goals, breaking down big tasks into smaller steps, and then celebrating those wins along the way.
Okay.
Positive feedback, encouragement, those are huge for building self-efficacy. It's about creating a supportive environment where learners feel confident taking risks.
It's like building that confidence muscle.
Exactly.
Just like you'd train any other skill.
Exactly.
And now for the assessment, I'm most excited for BrainPrint.
Okay.
This is like discovering your learning superpower.
Wait, it really is. BrainPrint gets into this fascinating world of multiple intelligences, which basically says we all have different cognitive strengths beyond the traditional views of what's considered intelligent.
This is where I get really curious. You mentioned before that I'm strong in logical mathematical thinking.
You are.
I always thought that meant like I'm good at math, but how would that help me, say, learn a new language? Those seem totally different.
You'd be surprised. So the book gets into subject-specific learning strategies based on your brain print. For a logical mathematical learner tackling a new language, it becomes this new puzzle to solve.
Okay.
Instead of just memorizing phrases, you'd be great at breaking down grammar rules, analyzing sentence structures, finding the patterns within the language.
To find those logical connections.
Yes.
Almost like cracking a code.
Exactly. Instead of memorizing vocabulary lists, you might create systems, charts to organize words based on their grammatical function, using your analytical strengths to make the language make sense.
That's so cool. So even within a subject that might seem more aligned with a different intelligence, there are still ways to use your dominant one.
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of personalized learning, right?
Yeah.
It's about finding those points where your strengths and the subject matter intersect.
Okay, let's shift gears for a second. Let's talk about spatial intelligence.
Okay.
This one always fascinated me because it seems so tied to creativity, visual thinking. But how would a spatial learner approach, say, history? That's more facts, dates.
Right. Well, for a spatial learner, visual aids are key.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine them creating timelines, mind maps, even 3D models to see historical events and relationships.
Ooh, wow.
Instead of just reading about a battle, they might build a diorama of the battlefield.
To really understand.
And understand the spatial dynamics.
That's so cool.
Making history come alive.
It's like they experience the past through a different lens.
Exactly.
Okay, last one. Bodily kinesthetic intelligence.
Mm.
This feels especially relevant now with so much screen time.
Absolutely.
We're always sitting, staring at screens.
Right.
And for these learners, movement is key.
It's essential.
For engagement and remembering things.
Exactly.
So even in a subject like math, which can seem very abstract, they can benefit from hands-on activities.
Absolutely.
Like imagine using manipulatives to learn about fractions or acting out geometric concepts with their bodies.
That's a great example. It's about making those abstract ideas tangible.
Turning them into something real.
Yeah. And it's not limited to academic subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Think about a bodily kinesthetic learner studying history. Instead of just reading about a historical dance, they could learn the dance.
Wow. That's amazing.
Experiencing history through movement.
Okay, before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I want to touch on one more thing.
Yeah.
This really struck me from the book, The Concept of Optimal Learning Strategies.
Okay.
It sounds like it's about taking everything we've learned about ourselves, all these assessments, and then using it to create like a truly personalized plan.
A roadmap, almost.
Am I on the right track?
You are. The book takes all these assessments, helps you put that info together into a plan, like having a customized roadmap just for your brain.
So it's not just like knowing our strengths and weaknesses. It's about using that knowledge to actually learn better.
Exactly. That's the whole point.
I'm sold. But does this only work for like school subjects? Or can we use these ideas for learning other things like hobbies?
Oh, it absolutely applies to anything you want to learn.
Really?
Yeah. Let's say you're trying to learn to cook. Someone with strong linguistic intelligence, they might excel at following recipes, learning culinary terms.
Okay.
But someone strong in logical mathematical, they might love the precision of measurements and ratios in baking.
That makes sense. It's finding the approaches that work best for your brain. What about someone whose dominant intelligence is naturalistic? Yeah. I feel like they'd be amazing gardeners.
Definitely. They'd thrive on understanding how plants, soil, and weather all work together. They might even be great at composting or attracting beneficial insects.
That's cool. It's like their learning is just naturally part of their passion.
Exactly.
Okay, so the book gives all this amazing insight into our learning styles.
Right.
But does it actually tell you how to use this knowledge?
It does.
Like, does it tell me how to study history if I'm a visual learner?
It gives you the tools.
Okay, now I'm really curious. Can you give us a little sneak peek?
Sure.
Let's say someone's dominant intelligence is musical. How would the book suggest they approach learning math or science? Those don't seem very musical.
You'd be surprised how much overlap there can be. For a musical learner tackling math, they might use rhythm and melody to remember formulas or multiplication tables.
Oh, wow.
Or even create songs or raps about math concepts, making them more memorable and fun.
So it's like turning math into a musical masterpiece.
I love it. What about science? How could music help there?
Imagine exploring the physics of sound waves through music, or using musical analogies to understand complex science processes. They could even create musical representations of data.
That's incredible.
Right. It's like opening up this whole new dimension of learning.
And this works for every subject, every intelligence type. It does. It's about finding those creative connections between what you're good at and the subject, making learning personal and engaging. And that leads to deeper understanding and actually remembering what you learn.
This is blowing my mind. It's like this book is a secret decoder ring for unlocking how we learn best.
I love that analogy.
I have to admit, when we started this, I was a little skeptical. I thought personalized learning, that sounds nice, but isn't it just a fancy way of saying different people learn differently?
I get that.
But this book has really opened my eyes to how deep and complex this approach is.
It is.
It's not just acknowledging our differences, it's about understanding them on like a brain level and then using that to change how we learn.
Yes, it's a whole new way of thinking about it.
I'm so impressed. Now, before we move on, I'm curious, what surprised you the most as you were researching this book?
Honestly, the level of detail and how practical it is, it's not just theory, it's filled with advice you can use right away. It takes the guesswork out of personalized learning.
Gives you that roadmap.
Exactly.
I totally agree. And for me, the biggest thing is the idea that even our motivation can be assessed and used to our advantage.
That's powerful, isn't it?
That's a game changer. It means we're not stuck with how we are. We can learn to be more motivated.
We absolutely can. And it shows that learning isn't just about, how smart you are. It's about understanding and using our emotions, our
Yeah.
motivations.
It's all connected.
Absolutely.
Okay. So this deep dive has got me wondering, if personalized learning is the future of education, how do we make these kinds of assessments more available?
That's the question, isn't it?
Because right now it seems like these tools are mostly for people who have the resources or are already in that world.
Right, it's a great question, and it's one that educators, policymakers, researchers are all wrestling with.
Yeah.
There's definitely a growing movement toward personalized learning, but there are still barriers to overcome.
Like what?
Well, one of the main ones is simply access. These tools and resources are often really expensive, and not every school or individual can afford them.
Right, it shouldn't be a privilege to understand your own brain.
Exactly.
And I'm guessing there are also like logistical challenges with making this work in a normal classroom.
Absolutely.
You've got 30 kids, each with their own unique learning style.
Right.
How can a teacher possibly meet all those needs?
It's a big challenge. It requires a shift in thinking, both from teachers and from students,
Okay.
moving away from that one-size-fits-all approach.
Towards individuality.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a big ask, especially in a system focused on standardized tests and the same curriculum for everyone.
Which brings us to another challenge, teacher training. Do teachers even feel ready for this?
Right,
This is a
exactly.
whole new way of thinking about education.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's a crucial piece. It's not enough to just have the tools, you need to know how to use them. We have to invest in training that gives teachers the knowledge and skills to create truly personalized learning experiences.
I'm also curious about technology's role in all of this.
Yes.
It seems like it could be a powerful tool and a distraction at the same time.
It absolutely can be both.
On one hand, there are all these amazing online learning platforms, adaptive assessments. They can cater to different learning styles,
Right.
but then there's the constant fight for attention.
Yeah, the smartphones, the social media.
It's everywhere.
It's a lot to navigate. Technology can be a game changer for personalized learning. It gives access to individualized platforms, assessments, tons of resources for different learners,
Okay.
but we have to use it carefully. We don't want technology to become a barrier to learning or make existing inequalities worse.
So finding that sweet spot where tech enhances learning but doesn't replace the human element.
Exactly. Because we still need those real connections, real interactions to really thrive.
This has been so eye-opening. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise.
Oh.
I'm leaving with a renewed sense of hope for what education can be.
I'm so glad to hear that.
I can't wait to dig deeper into this book and start using these ideas in my own life.
I encourage you to do just that. Explore the resources, experiment with different strategies, figure out what works best for you. Remember, personalized learning isn't just a trend, it's a whole new way of looking at things. It's about recognizing that learning isn't one size fits all.
That each person has the potential to reach their full potential.
Exactly.
This conversation has been so inspiring. I'm walking away with such hope for the future of education. But I think it's important to remember, personalized learning isn't just for kids in school.
That's right.
It's a lifelong journey.
It's about constantly learning and growing.
So no matter where you are in life, there's always more to learn about how you learn best. Embracing that can open up new possibilities and help you reach your goals in any area of life.
Absolutely. It's about finding that joy in learning and realizing we all have that potential to be lifelong learners.
Beautifully said. And as always, we encourage you to keep digging deeper, explore personalized learning, and discover the incredible potential that's inside each of you.
Yes, keep learning and growing.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep those minds curious and those hearts open to the joy of learning.
See you next time. It really is, yeah. It's about taking all of those assessments, and then it helps you kind of synthesize all that information
okay.
into this like personalized learning plan, like a customized roadmap just for your brain.
So it's not just like knowing our strengths and weaknesses. It's about using that knowledge to actually learn better.
Exactly. That's the whole point.
I'm sold.
Mm-hmm.
But does this only work for like school subjects? Or can we use these ideas for learning other things like hobbies?
Oh, it absolutely applies to anything you want to learn.
Really?
Yeah. Let's say you're trying to learn to cook. Someone with strong linguistic intelligence, they might excel at following recipes, learning culinary terms.
Okay.
But someone strong and logical, mathematical, they might love the precision of measurements and ratios in baking.
That makes sense. It's finding the approaches that work best for your brain.
Mm-hmm.
What about someone whose dominant intelligence is naturalistic? I feel like they'd be amazing gardeners.
Definitely. They'd thrive on understanding how plants, soil, and weather all work together. They might even be great at composting or attracting beneficial insects.
So cool. It's like their learning is just a natural part of their passion.
Exactly.
Okay, so the book gives all this amazing insight into our learning styles.
Right.
But does it actually tell you how to use this knowledge?
It does.
Like, does it tell me how to study history if I'm a visual learner?
It gives you the tools.
Okay, now I'm really curious. Can you give us a little sneak peek?
Sure.
Let's say someone's dominant intelligence is musical. How would the book suggest they approach learning math or science? Because those don't seem very musical.
You'd be surprised how much overlap there can be. For a musical learner tackling math, they might use rhythm and melody to remember formulas or multiplication tables.
Oh, wow.
Or even create songs or raps about math concepts, making them more memorable and fun.
So it's like turning math into a musical masterpiece.
I love it!
What about science? How could music help there?
Imagine exploring the physics of sound waves through music or using musical analogies to understand complex science processes. They could even create musical representations of data.
That's incredible.
Right. It's like opening up this whole new dimension of learning.
And this works for every subject, every intelligence type.
It does. It's about finding those creative connections between what you're good at and the subject, making learning personal and engaging. And that leads to deeper understanding and actually remembering what you learn.
This is blowing my mind. It's like this book is a secret decoder ring for unlocking how we learn best.
I love that analogy.
I have to admit, when we started this, I was a little skeptical. I thought, personalized learning, that sounds nice, but
yeah.
Isn't it just a fancy way of saying different people learn differently?
I get that.
But this book has really opened my eyes to how deep and complex this approach is.
It is.
It's not just acknowledging our differences. It's about understanding them on like a brain level and then using that to change how we learn.
Yes, it's a whole new way of thinking about it.
I'm so impressed. Now, before we move on, I'm curious. What surprised you the most as you were researching this book?
Honestly, the level of detail and how practical it is, it's not just theory. It's filled with advice you can use right away. It takes the guesswork out of personalized learning.
Gives you that roadmap.
Exactly.
I totally agree. And for me, the biggest thing is the idea that even our motivation can be assessed and used to our advantage.
That's powerful, isn't it?
That's a game changer. It means we're not stuck with how we are.
Huh.
We can learn to be more motivated.
We absolutely can. And it shows that learning isn't just about, you know, how smart you are. It's about understanding and using our emotions or motivations.
It's all connected.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this deep dive has got me wondering, if personalized learning is the future of education, how do we make these kinds of assessments more available?
That's the question, isn't it?
Because right now, it seems like these tools are mostly for people who have the resources or are already in that world.
Right. It's a great question. And it's one that educators, policymakers, researchers are all wrestling with.
Yeah.
There's definitely a growing movement toward personalized learning, but there are still barriers to overcome.
Like what?
Well, one of the main ones is simply access. These tools and resources are often really expensive, and not every school or individual can afford them.
Right. It shouldn't be a privilege to understand your own brain.
Exactly.
And I'm guessing there are also like logistical challenges with making this work in a normal classroom.
Absolutely.
You've got 30 kids, each with their own unique learning style.
Right.
How can a teacher possibly meet all those needs?
It's a big challenge. It requires a shift in thinking, both from teachers and from students,
okay.
moving away from that one-size-fits-all approach.
Where it's individuality.
Yes, and that's a big ask, especially in a system focused on standardized tests and the same curriculum for everyone.
Which brings us to another challenge, teacher training.
Mm-hmm.
Do teachers even feel ready for this?
Right, exactly.
This is a whole new way of thinking about education.
It is, and that's a crucial piece. It's not enough to just have the tools, you need to know how to use them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to invest in training that gives teachers the knowledge and skills to create truly personalized learning experiences.
I'm also curious about technology's role in all of this.
Yes.
It seems like it could be a powerful tool and a distraction at the same time.
It absolutely can be both.
On one hand, there are all these amazing online learning platforms, adaptive assessments.
Mm-hmm.
They can cater to different learning styles.
Right.
But then there's the constant fight for attention.
Yeah, the smartphones, the social media.
It's everywhere.
It's a lot to navigate. Technology can be a game changer for personalized learning. It gives access to individualized platforms, assessments, tons of resources for different learners.
Yeah. Okay.
But we have to use it carefully. We don't want technology to become a barrier to learning or make existing inequalities worse.
So finding that sweet spot where tech enhances learning but doesn't replace the human element.
Exactly, because we still need those real connections, real interactions to really thrive.
This has been so eye-opening. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise. I'm leaving with a renewed sense of hope for what education can be.
I'm so glad to hear that.
I can't wait to dig deeper into this book and start using these ideas in my own life.
I encourage you to do just that. Explore the resources, experiment with different strategies, figure out what works best for you. Remember, personalized learning isn't just a trend, it's a whole new way of looking at things. It's about recognizing that learning isn't one size fits all.
And that each person has the potential to reach their full potential.
Exactly.
This conversation has been so inspiring. I'm walking away with such hope for the future of education. But I think it's important to remember, personalized learning isn't just for kids in school.
That's right.
That's a lifelong journey.
It's about constantly learning and growing.
So no matter where you are in life, there's always more to learn about how you learn best. Embracing that can open up new possibilities and help you reach your goals in any area of life.
Absolutely. It's about finding that joy in learning and realizing we all have that potential to be lifelong learners.
Beautifully said. And as always, we encourage you to keep digging deeper, explore personalized learning, and discover the incredible potential that's inside each of you.
Yes. Keep learning and growing.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep those minds curious and those hearts open to the joy of learning.
See you next time.
And for our listeners, you know, this has really gotten me thinking. If we zoom out even further, what is this shift towards personalized learning? What does that mean for the future of education overall?
Ooh, that's a big question.
Yeah. How do you see it changing things in the years to come?
Well, I think we're just scratching the surface. I imagine a future where education isn't so much about standardized tests and the same curriculum for everyone.
Okay.
It's more about, like, nurturing each student's individual talents, their passions. Recognizing that intelligence takes many forms, you know,
mm-hmm.
and success shouldn't be measured with just one ruler.
So moving away from that factory model of education, more towards like a human-centered approach.
Yes.
Each student seen as an individual.
Yes. That's the idea.
That sounds amazing. But how do we actually get there?
Yeah.
What are the steps we need to take to make that happen?
It's a complex challenge for sure. But I think awareness is a huge first step.
Okay.
We need to educate ourselves, learn about the power of personalized learning,
mm-hmm.
and understand all the different ways people learn best. And this isn't just for educators. It's for parents, policymakers, the learners themselves.
Everyone has a role.
Absolutely. It's a collective effort. It takes a shift in our thinking, a willingness to challenge the way things have always been done.
Right. It's not just about changing, like, the textbooks are using new technology.
Right.
It's a deeper change. And speaking of technology, what's its role in all this?
Yeah, that's a big one. Technology can be a powerful tool for change, for sure. It can provide access to so many resources and learning platforms tailored to individual needs. But we have to use it wisely. It should enhance human interaction, not replace it completely.
Right. We still need those real connections.
Absolutely. And we also need to address the issue of access. Making sure that everyone, no matter their background, their location, can benefit from these advancements.
So finding that balance between using tech effectively, but not forgetting the human element.
Yes, exactly.
And ensuring everyone has equal opportunities. This conversation has been so inspiring. I feel really hopeful about the future of education. But I think it's important to remember, personalized learning isn't just for students in school.
I agree.
It's something we can all embrace throughout our lives.
It's a lifelong journey of learning about yourself and growing.
So, to our listeners, no matter where you are in life, there's always more to discover about how you learn best. And embracing that can open up so many possibilities, can help you reach your goals no matter what they are.
Absolutely. It's about finding that joy in learning and recognizing that we all have the potential to be lifelong learners.
That's beautifully said. As always, we encourage you to keep exploring, keep learning about personalized learning, and discover the potential inside each of you. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into personalized learning. Until next time, keep those minds curious and those hearts open to the joy of learning.